Hello and welcome to another edition of Heart of Healthcare. My name is Dr. Jan Bonhoeffer, and these podcasts are about helping physicians restore balance in their lives so we can co-create a medical system that benefits everyone. A quick reminder that you can find more information about our nonprofit, Heart-Based Medicine, and the work we do to support healthcare professionals at heartbasedmedicine.org.
Welcome to the Heart of Healthcare podcast, Series 2, Episode 8, when we ask, how can we keep the holistic heart of nursing beating strongly?
Today, we are lucky enough to be joined by Keith Carlson, Nurse Keith, who has nursed for the last two decades, and he has worked in a variety of clinical settings in home care, community health, case management, public health, hospice, and has also held management and executive positions, including chief nursing officer and director of nursing. And he is a board-certified nurse coach. Now, for everybody overseas, listen very carefully. Under the auspices of the American Holistic Nurses Credentialing Corporation. I truly want to know more about that. Sounds marvelous. Just the name of it, I like to learn more. And we're looking forward to explore how a heart-centered approach to nursing and nursing training and coaching could help to transform healthcare practice around the world with Keith Carlson. Nurse Keith, welcome.
Thank you so much. Thanks so much for having me.
And I'm also delighted to welcome back my regular and beloved fellow podcast panelist, all the way from Hawaii, Dr. Dan Dinnenberg. Dr. Dan Dinnenberg was one of the original physicians at One Medical, and as a clinical instructor at UCSF, has had extensive training in functional medicine with double board certification in family medicine and integrative holistic medicine. Hello and welcome, Dan.
Hi, Jan. Such a pleasure to be back. Keith. Really excited for this conversation.
Hey, me too. Nice to meet you, Daniel.
As well.
So let's dive into it, Keith. You are a long-serving nurse who has experienced extreme burnout and seen how tough the nursing role can be on the front line. Can you share with us what that was like and how the experience prompted you to try and teach a new approach?
Oh my gosh. Well, that's a good question. My burnout occurred when I was working with underserved populations in a very economically depressed city in Western Massachusetts. And I worked in the world of mostly HIV, hepatitis C, and a lot of my clients also suffered from substance use disorders and mental health disorders. So it was a very complex community and a very difficult row to hoe as a clinician, and I worked for a nonprofit, and we did a very interesting, we did sort of supplemental Medicaid work where we took on the riskiest patients, and they were very high needs patients. And my boundaries were not terribly strong at the time. I would visit my patients at home. I was very involved in their lives, and I burned myself out. I just gave and gave and gave and gave, and I sacrificed myself on the yoke of my job, basically. And at a certain point, I realized through depersonalization and burnout and compassion fatigue and this sense of really not being able to go on, and that it was permeating my personal life, that's where things really got messy. And my wife at the time said, you know what, you're quitting this job. And she basically grabbed me by the scruff of the neck and said, it's time. And I, at that point, transformed my life and really never looked back. And that was the seed of me wanting to help other nurses and help them learn from my mistakes, to learn how to empower themselves and strengthen themselves in the face of a difficult career and a difficult position as a healthcare provider, and also make my own contributions to the quality of care by helping nurses be healthier personally and professionally. So that's very quick synopsis of what that journey was like.
Wow. And it goes to show how the saying of behind a successful man is a wise and successful woman is true again.
Yes, that's very true. I have a different wise and successful woman behind me now, but there's, you know, having someone who has your back and can see you who you're really for who you really are and call you out when they see that it's time to change and you might have your blinders on, whereas they might say in England, your blinkers, and it's time to shift. Yeah. And we have to have the temerity and courage and the humility to pivot when it's time to pivot.
Mm-hmm. What did it feel like? This is such an important moment that mm-hmm. a lot of healthcare professionals know, or actually don't quite know yet, but are afraid of. They're kind of sensing, I'm overspending, I'm overgiving, I'm overinvested, I'm exhausted. And yet I continue doing what I do because I see the value of what it is. And I'm kind of afraid to let go. Or what is it? Is it fear? Or what is it that keeps you going at a moment when you actually know it would be wiser to stop?
Well, something I've diagnosed in people and I've written and podcasted about is something I call nurse martyr syndrome. And it's very akin to those of us who've been in the nonprofit world or the world of people who work out in NGOs and, you know, around the world in underserved countries and troubled communities and war zones, is that we feel indispensable. And we feel like the world is going to fall apart without us. And if we leave, we're abandoning our colleagues. And there's survivor's guilt involved in moving on. So when I mentioned earlier that it takes humility and courage and temerity in order to make that pivot, we need to be able to see that, for better or worse, we are not indispensable, that other people can do this work as well. And we can't necessarily stay on the front lines forever or whatever the work is we're doing. And we need to have the humility to see that, yes, I contribute. I have something to say. I have care and compassion and heart to give to my patients and my colleagues or whatever milieu in which I find myself. However, there's this moment where we have to realize that we're wounded, and we have to be able to realize that if I step away, the world will keep turning. And no, people won't get exactly the same care that they would get from me, but someone else will pick it up and carry that particular ball. And having the ability to recognize that and move away from that sense of being a martyr and sacrificing yourself on the cross of your work, like I did, that's a very powerful statement. It's a very empowering moment in which you can realize that and see your own fragility, your own vulnerability, and make a decision to support yourself. Because you can't really care for others when you're allowing yourself to go down that particular path, that dangerous, self-injurious path.
I see that, Keith. I think that is so unbelievably important when you start to nourish yourself and you realize that that's actually being of service to those who you are serving. I think that's incredibly important. I think one thing I'm really curious about is the pivot that you had made, because one of the things is when you said, I gave and gave and gave and sacrificed, the one thing that is an aspect to that is you were personally integrated into your clients. And so that allowed you to have a deep sense of caring and a deep connection to your patients, those who you took care of. How do you, in this evolution that I'm hearing, how do you do that pivot where you're still contributing and you're bringing care and compassion and heart, and yet in a regenerative way, where you're still nourishing yourself and you're still giving and you're still personally connected? Because I think that's the art. I think some people make that pivot, but they put up a little blocker. They put up that boundary. And it sounds like what you're saying is you're still able to be yourself and personally engaged but with a little bit of that nourishing. So can you tell me a little bit about how you managed to do that in your pivot?
Sure. One thing is developing the deepest, keenest powers of self-awareness and self-knowledge possible is extremely important. If we don't understand ourselves, if we can't see ourselves from a witness perspective and really understand who we are, where we come from, what our motivations are, what our deepest values are, and what are the injuries and the traumas in our past that cause us to behave in certain ways, then if we can do that and we can develop that level of self-awareness, I believe that's where the rubber hits the road and we can actually show up as our true authentic selves. So, you know, whether it's developing your emotional intelligence, your behavioral and relational intelligence, whether it's examining other aspects of yourself, digging deep into those old traumas and healing those parts of yourself, you know, whether you do it through psychotherapy or you do it through astrology or the Enneagram, you know, whatever it is you're using, whatever tool it is, if you can feel empowered enough to take a, not a cold, hard look at yourself, but a deep, compassionate look at yourself, I believe that self-knowledge is one of the engines that can drive living an authentic life and also working in an authentic way and being true to yourself, even in those difficult, dark moments when you feel like you can't give anymore. And if you can turn that around, you can really work from a very different perspective and you can see your work from a different perspective.
Totally with you. Let's dive deeper here a little bit. And when, you know, particularly at those dark moments that you're talking about, or at actually very intensive moments, let's say moments of a sense of emergency, which we all know, right? We're kind of running in emergency mode. It may have the aspect of we're truly in an emergency situation, kind of medical emergency. It may be the emergency that you have described. The world stops if I don't do this. Like if I don't help this situation, you know, whatever it kind of creates that sense of emergency, or for heaven's sake, the global pandemic right now, right? That has really worsened the situation. And with all these moments of stress, burnout, depression, trauma, at the brink of suicide, like moments that are become then a personal emergency. How is it possible? What is it? Does it take a wife to whip you out of this? Or is it possible, maybe for those who are listening and may kind of resonate with this feeling, is it possible to actually change? Is it possible to step out? And how could stepping out happen? What could it look like? And how could stepping out actually save my own life and therefore help save other lives?
Well, sometimes it does take a loved one to, like I said, grab you by the scruff of the neck and say, you're quitting now, right? So sometimes it has to be an outside force that tells you it's time. And if your family life is being sacrificed along with you, then there's definitely room for change and it's time to change because you can't drag your family with you, and it's unfair to them and it's unfair to you, and it's not a healthy place to be for anyone. And it can ruin relationships, it can ruin marriages, it can really have very deleterious effects. So again, I go back to this sense of self-awareness and authentic self-knowledge, where we can look at ourselves from that witness perspective and take a little bit of a bird's eye view and remove ourselves from the trauma in which we're spinning and be able to look at it and examine it and say, okay, this is what I'm seeing. This is what I'm feeling. And this doesn't feel good. And I can make a list of the ways in which it doesn't feel good. And I can see the parts of my life that are suffering and that are maybe splintering apart. If we talk about relationships, for instance, and we can look at how we feel at work, what's happening for us when we're at work. So when I'm there, say on the ICU, what's happening in my body during the day? You know, what kind of trauma am I experiencing? What's happening with my consciousness and my awareness when I'm home from work? And how is it pervading other parts of how I feel and how I live and how I comport myself and behave in my relationships out in the community and out in the world? And sometimes I've seen people able to do that themselves, but often we need a guide or a mentor. We need a coach. We need a therapist. We need a counselor. We need a faith leader. We need a mentor, someone who can hold our hand and walk us through that particular change that needs to happen. And hopefully we have someone in our lives like that to whom we can turn, and we can avoid and sidestep a crisis if we take action. I hope that answers your question.
It does in many ways. Dan, you look like you want to intake.
Yeah, well, it just really resonates with me, that idea. I think, you know, being in integrative holistic medicine, over time, it's almost been a journey from reaction. Someone comes in, I diagnose, I help with a treatment and realizing, and then now working as a physician guide and really working at the prevention level, really bringing that awareness that Keith is talking about, the soul searching, the understanding what meaning and purpose brings into their lives, what they're looking for, and then being able to, in a co-creative way, figure out where they want to go, how they want to get there. And then in so doing, you are preventing that reactionary scruff of the neck. This is too much. And so I love what you're saying. And I love how you can become the witness. I know a lot of us have our own ways of doing that, but whether it be through meditation or through mindfulness or a practice of, you know, just grounding myself and kind of looking down at the situation, that does give that deeper self-awareness to understand. I'm really excited about that, but it's also what is exciting to me about having Nurse Keith here is, like, you know, you started this conversation with like all of the different modalities that you've worked in, whether it be in hospice or in public health or in home care or in this really kind of, whether it be destitute HIV, hepatitis, like these are that traumatic places. And so I'm looking to see what I've heard is probably how you're doing it yourself to stay centered and grounded so you can enter into that situation. How do you deal with it when you're in that place? How do you become the witness when someone is sobbing, when someone, it is a challenging moment? Because what I've developed, you know, actually really well is how to do my own self-care so I show up in a place where I'm really ready to receive. But I also now am working in the prevention of and health optimizing and not in that throes of crisis. That's what I want to know from you. How do you pull that in and stay grounded in that setting?
Mm-hmm. So you're talking about when, let's say, we're sitting with a patient who's traumatized, right? Mm-hmm. And our heart goes out to them. And just think about that phrase. I just thought of it just now. You know, my heart goes out to you. What does that really mean when we say that? So if you use that as a metaphor, and your heart goes out to someone. So if you think about taking your heart and externalizing it, and like you're giving it to someone, you know, we can give part of ourselves away if we're not careful. Like when I was working with all those, you know, I had a caseload of 40, 50, 60 patients, all of whom had incredibly complex lives. And I gave and gave and gave and gave and gave, you know, I never stopped. And we need to be able to be present for someone in an incredibly authentic and compassionate way. However, we also need to, on a certain level, guard our hearts. And that doesn't mean doing what I think you mentioned earlier, Dan, which is you can be a little cold, you can bring a wall down. You know, you can't the portcullis can't drop, because then you're not really going to be able to be present. So how do you ride that line? And this is a, I guess it's a rhetorical question, maybe. How do you walk that line between feeling as an, if you're an empath like I am, you feel the pain of the other person. You can really tune into the pain of that person. However, how do you retain enough of your own self-awareness to guard that part of your heart and your spirit so that you're not leaking out towards that other person and draining yourself, you know? So there's this energetic exchange that happens in those moments. And I don't necessarily know what the trick is, but I think through heart math, through all these different modalities, we can find the one that works for us in order to protect ourselves just enough so that we can be present without giving ourselves away. Does that make sense?
It does. It really, I mean, it answers the question. I think it just, I'm thinking about it because it's interesting, because as I've evolved, I've noticed that part of the creation of what I do and who I connect with is allowing myself to be completely, fully engaged with that person. Mm-hmm. But I've also over time seen less people, spread it out, done my own self-care before and after. And that is an incredible gift that not everyone has developed or get to do. And so one of the things that Jan and I keep having this conversation is like, how do we revolutionize, how do we evolve heart-centered approach to medicine in all of these fields? Not everyone can see a smaller number of people in a day or not take care of the underserved. I've done that in my lifetime. And right now it's challenging to bring that in. And that's what I'm really looking for, is like, that's the part that I want to hear. Because of your experiences, because you've been in all these different walks of life, how do you bring it into each and every one of these, even if you're seeing 40 people a day, because that's what some people are doing?
Well, let's take a step back for a second. Let's go back to medical school and let's go back to nursing school. No one really wants to go back, but let's think about it for a second. What are we really teaching our medical residents and medical students? What are we teaching our nursing students about wellness and self-care and boundaries and emotional intelligence and heart math and the Enneagram or whatever it is we're bringing to bear? In nursing school, in the United States at least, it's what I can speak to, we're teaching to the test. We're teaching to the NCLEX, the licensing exam. So whatever's on the exam, that's what gets lectured on. That's what we focus on, because we want our students to pass the NCLEX and get licensed, because that has an impact on the standing of our school, right? So we're teaching to the test, and everything else mostly falls by the wayside and gets some lip service along the way. You know, a nursing professor might mention self-care, like make sure you go home and take a bath and light a candle and, you know, get some exercise. It's like, great. Okay. But that's the real surface level of self-care. And Dan, I want to ask you just for a second, what gets taught in medical school when it comes to boundaries and wellness, and what's the culture of medical school? How are we preparing new physicians to get out into the world and deal with trauma and take care of themselves?
And Jan and I have talked about this at length. It not only is it not covered, but the modeling that exists, what's mm-hmm. going on behind the scenes, is actually quite the opposite of what you want to see. Even if exactly. there's lip service, you know, I was still, you know, in the 120 hour work, you know, work week style. And it's just, it's too much. It's 32 hours on. And mm-hmm. to then say, oh yeah, by the way, self-care, but you've been on call for 36 hours. Mm-hmm. There's a dissonance that exists.
Mm-hmm. So, right. I knew you were going to say something like that, because I know what the reality is. So if we're teaching and we're, what's the word, inculcating this type of behavior into our fledgling clinicians, and they're going out into the world to work, ICU, trauma, emergency medicine, home health, whatever they're doing, hospice, are we teaching them how to guard their hearts? Are we teaching them how to nurture their own self-awareness and their emotional intelligence? You know, we're not teaching to those, because that doesn't serve what, as a school, what our purpose is, or what we perceive as our purpose. So I know I'm playing a little devil's advocate here, because that's where the cognitive dissonance comes. I wasn't taught to care for myself through the nursing educational experience. And the people who hired me and supervised me never really seemed to talk about it. They were focused on productivity, for instance, right? And what if I got out of nurse practitioner school and I'm, you know, very disillusioned as a family nurse practitioner, seeing patients every 15 minutes, and I'm feeling that I'm in real ethical, difficult ethical waters here, because I can't give my patients their due in 5 minutes. So there's this notion of which, since we're not taught it, since it's not part of our wider culture, and it's not part of the culture of the schools, we need to learn these skills ourselves. And it's people like you and Jan who are bringing these conversations to bear, showing people that there's another world out there, there's another approach. And it's so important to be able to learn what we need to learn to care for ourselves, and unlearn the habits we were taught in medical school or nursing school. And I think it's possible, Dan, but it's I'm not going to say it's easy.
Keith, what is your vision? Can we align? I mean, we're clearly aligned here. We're seeing a huge gap, and we see that we want to change the future, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what is your vision of this future? What is your vision of a next generation nursing school or a next generation nursing practice?
Well, I know we don't have much time, but I'd like to see schools that get away from teaching to the exam only, and where they teach actual skills for self-care. What if we had an ongoing seminar on heart math? Or what if we had an ongoing seminar on other types of wellness practices, and actually not just pay lip service to them, but actually make them part of the curriculum? What if a medical school did the same? What if the whole resident system and interning system changed? What if we turned it around on its head? That's a huge cultural shift. And then I would like to see actual employers, large and small employers, actually have more than just lip service to an employee assistance program. I would like to see them completely eradicate bullying and incivility, and pay attention to culture from the top down, and have that communicated from the CEO down, and have a zero tolerance. I'd like to see different approaches to staffing, and different approaches to, you know, how we treat our employees so they don't feel like cannon fodder. I need a lot more time to flesh this out, but I feel like we need an incredibly deep and broad cultural shift. And perhaps these upcoming generations, the millennial generation and beyond, are the ones who are going to actually make these things happen. And I'm putting my eyes on that prize at this point.
I love your call to learn from the future, like Generation Z. Certainly, if we look at Gen Z's value set of this generation, it will be very much aligned with what we are all calling for together. So
I think so.
I believe this is such a valuable conversation, and this is what drives me to step out of, you know, pretty much step out of academic kind of life, and to see what can we do. So 20 years ago, I started an initiative on vaccine safety. And back then people said vaccine safety is like, who cares about vaccine safety? The vaccines are safe. It's all cool. Right. And then 20 years later, now it's clear. So I believe now we're kind of at the brink of something very similar. And it was possible in this enterprise for the last 20 years for me to raise awareness and to bring it into medical schools and to bring it to the World Health Organization and to actually change practice. And it was a bottom-up approach. And so that gives me courage to I just want to put oil on your fire. this is totally possible. This is totally possible, but it requires you and Dan and me and everybody who's listening to this to actually join forces, to really get together and say, what does it take to really bring this change about? And a lot of this has to do with role models. So, you know, what you do in your podcast, for example, where you're calling for this change. We'd love to go deeper with you on this. And I wonder if we could actually take meet you again on a second round, because we could kind of take it further from here to see what are these actual changes that will work in real life. Many people are disillusioned and feel like, you want to change the system? Impossible. The system is too big. You know, like, what can I do to change the system? But I feel in you that you have the passion to actually call for this change in culture.
Well, thank you so much. And, at this point in the second year of the pandemic, are the call to action's there. The signs are absolutely crystal clear. So if there needs to be individual and collective will to make these changes happen, so we really need it to be a clarion call for a major sea change, and people need to be able to speak out and actually be heard. So I think that's one of the next steps, is actually hearing the voices that are calling out there in the wilderness, so to speak. Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. And it's worth it. There was just an initiative in Switzerland of nurses, a huge initiative of nurses. The nursing associations have got together and have actually made, in Switzerland is a basic democracy, so many things are being voted on by the entire population. And so I think it was a couple of weeks ago that the country was voting on whether nurses should have better working conditions and higher salaries. And it was like, there was a participation that was close to unheard of, and it was very, very clearly accepted. So basically the entire population completely got the point that, you know, if we're not supporting nurses, if we're not making sure that the working environment is, you know, works for the healthcare professionals, everybody is suffering. Just
hallelujah.
Yeah. So this is what you're calling for. I think there are many, many activities going on right now. And if we could align forces, join forces, that'd be wonderful. So let's explore this more. Thank you so much for being on the show, Keith. It's a great pleasure.
And thank you. It's an honor and privilege.
Yeah. I'd like to ask, like, when people want to hear more of you, as I do, where would we look? Where would people find you?
The central place would be nursekeith.com. That's my main website. And they can find me all over social media, Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram. And my podcast is The Nurse Keith Show. It's on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and pretty much any podcast app you can find. So just The Nurse Keith Show, easy to find.
Fabulous. Nursekeith.com and The Nurse Keith Show. Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode of our Heart of Healthcare podcast series too. And you can find more information at heartbasedmedicine.org. And I deeply appreciate if you could click subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to this podcast on. Until next time, folks, thanks for listening and stay heart-centered.
This has been Heart Based Medicine Production. Thanks for listening.